Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutting. Let's get into the first news story of today. And this is actually a story, I think, from the weekend, where during the BizNews conference, Pick n Pay CEO Sean Summers said that South Africa's current leadership was, in many ways, a crime against humanity. He went on to say that the three crimes against humanity of the last century were fascism, socialism, and apartheid. And he said that the ANC was guilty of the first crime of the people of the century, against the people. He said, quote, "The once noble and almighty organization known as the African National Congress will be judged in biblical terms. There will be an Old Testament which will judge the ANC's founding fathers favorably for what they believed and stood for and suffered to free the country. Tragically, post the 90s, the ANC will be judged in the New Testament. It will not judge them kindly." He went on to say that there has been many countries across history and the world which have suffered tremendous calamities. He pointed to South Korea, Germany, Japan, who were all completely devastated by the major wars in those countries, and yet within 30 years had significantly recovered to become leading economic lights. Chris, there's a lot of interesting things to be said about this. I mean, crime against humanity, I think, you know, you can make some cases, definitely. When you think of crime against humanity, I think something like the Life Esidimeni case or the sort of ongoing entrenchment of poverty by poor policies definitely fit that bill. But the really interesting thing about this development is you having a CEO of a very large company saying something pretty aggressive towards the ANC. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I very much agree with you on both points there, but especially on the second point. It could be partly due to rising frustrations that we have seen across various sectors and more influential role players in the last few months, as especially water issues are coming to a head, water provision issues in places like Johannesburg. These have been taking place in other parts of the country for many years now. You've got ongoing load shedding. You've got that unemployment rate always hovering around 40%, youth unemployment over 70%. Whether these statistics, and it's easy to talk statistics, but it's real people we're talking about, it might be easier to categorize what's going on as a crime against humanity in hindsight, because you can compare it to what came before, you can see what came after, was it over a defined period of time, what are your definitions, your variables for using that sort of label. But I think there could be an element also at play here where we've got the elections on the 29th of May, so maybe now is the time to really put out one's real assessment and feelings about the situation as such an influential role player, because you're trying to push things in a certain direction. Not to ascribe any particular motive. The motives could be very positive on the part of the CEO, wanting more positive change, wanting reform to actually happen, not the promises of reform that have typified the presidency of President Ramaphosa, where you haven't seen prosecutions, you've seen various investment summits and promises, but nothing really in terms of positive reform. Indeed, it's a doubling down of more destructive policy reforms. So things like expropriation, other compensation, NHI, all of these things very close to being signed off on. And I wonder if this is taking hold in at least some parts of big business in South Africa, where if you're going to engage with government, what are you wanting to put forward to them in terms of a challenge or wanting from their side? It's not just a case of you always taking the narrative from them. So it'll be interesting to see if there are any more substantial outcomes from these sorts of comments. What follows this? What do you do with this? How do you use this to try and influence policy trajectory, to engage with political parties apart from the ANC? Because I doubt that this particular CEO will be welcome in Lithuli House, for example, but it's something to keep an eye on, and it's not what we've seen before generally from big business in South Africa.
No, exactly right. It definitely stands apart from that, and I sort of salute the CEO of Pick n Pay for being brave enough to buck that trend of so much of business just kind of bowing the head and not really saying what it thinks about the way the country is being governed at the moment. I do like it when people bring up these international comparisons, because the ANC, I think, has long relied on saying, you know, we have this terrible crime against our people, which went on for so long, and that's why things haven't improved is because it was such an deep and entrenched legacy. And, you know, I have some sympathy for some of the lines of thought there. But of course, when you look at the international scene, you begin to realize how much progress could have been made in the last 30 years. As the CEO here pointed out, South Korea, Japan, Germany, all completely devastated by wars, relatively poor, particularly South Korea, and those countries within about sort of 30 years turned their economies around in a big way due to good policy choices. Taiwan's another example. There are also other examples of countries that had China, for one, horribly misgoverned by the Maoists and embraced better policies. Not great policies, but better policies, and lifted hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. And the same thing in India, which has led the world in the last couple of years, probably in the number of people lifted out of poverty. So this ANC should be held to a higher standard. The progress made after 94 has not even been close to enough, and there has been remarkably little of it over the last 10 years. Okay, let's go on to our next story. And this is one of those ones that I'm always slightly annoyed to even be covering, because there was a time when journalists didn't believe that a tweet could be news. Unfortunately, we live in a world where a tweet is news. And this comes after the private school conglomeration or collection of private schools, the Curo Group, tweeted out a number of pictures of pretty small kids. I don't know, maybe like 7 or 8 years old, something like that, doing a careers day at their school. Variety of kids wearing different outfits and uniforms. There weren't that many pictures. I think there were like 4 or 5. However, one of the pictures had a black student play acting as a cashier and a white student play acting as a customer. And the Gauteng Department of Education says that this means that there needs to be an urgent investigation into the Curo schools following the allegations that, in fact, this was racial stereotyping that perpetuated a sort of particular view of black South Africans at this career day. The department said that the post by Curo Holdings conveyed a racially unbalanced narrative concerning the potential future careers of learners. This should be seen within the background of recent racial challenges that Curo has faced, one of which involved a black educator being called a monkey at one of its institutions. And the Gauteng Department of Education says that it does not take such racial incidents lightly, and that these are cultivating attitudes which reflect a society that has not fully dealt with racism and poses a threat not only to the education system and the model citizens it envisions to create, but also a nation that still works tirelessly towards overcoming such attitudes. Now, quite frankly, this speaks to me of being rank electioneering, trying to stir up sort of racial controversy on social media. The idea that this is obviously racism is, I think, completely mad. And to me, when you consider the ANC's prior ideological hostility towards private schools, I really do wonder whether this is the beginning of a new assault on private education. Chris, you wanted to mention some facts about our education system and why this might not be perhaps the world's most pressing issue right now.
Just before I get to that, remind me at the start of that statement from the department, is it racially balanced with the words?
Racially unbalanced narrative was the phrase they used.
Racially unbalanced narrative. I mean, just maybe I'm nitpicky, but on sort of linguistic use, what would be racially balanced then? I'm not, you know, when I hear that sort of language, I get concerned around things like social engineering, tinkering with how many people of this particular skin color, which they is an accident of birth that they happen to have. You need this, you need that. I get very concerned when I hear any sort of that language from any government department.
It's also pretty implicit in this entire statement that there's something wrong with being a cashier, which there is very much not anything wrong right. with being a cashier.
Yeah. I mean, in the wider employment, or should we say unemployment, context of South Africa, we mentioned earlier that number always around 40%. When you've got that macro context, why make any light or look down on any form of work? in that context in and of itself, but also why demean in any particular way if someone wants to aspire to be or is a cashier, they could find much fulfillment in that particular line of work. They could move on to other things. It's not the sort of deterministic fixed thing. It could be one way to help some people get out of unemployment if you want to look at it in a way of upskilling in that way. I find it quite concerning that it's seen in a sort of demeaned way. Just getting onto those statistics that you also mentioned in education specifically. So in March, we at the CRA published our latest macro review on the state of education in South Africa, tertiary, secondary, et cetera, et cetera. And just some of the items to highlight. According to the Department of Basic Education, enrollment in grade R increased by 199% over 23 years. And that is a notable achievement. However, in February, the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education noted that 1.3 million children aged between 3 and 5 do not attend any form of early learning program, and fewer than half of those in early learning are, quote, developmentally on track, end quote. According to the 2023 Reading Panel background report, fewer than half of grade one children learn the letters of the alphabet by the end of that grade, while 82% of grade four children cannot read for meaning. And just on the sort of trajectory of schooling, basic schooling, Department of Basic Education figures show that just 61% of the grade ones of 2012 reached grade 12 in 2023 without repeating or dropping out. Is that really the sort of public education system that is serving the youth of South Africa, equipping them in the current world of 2024, a more integrated world, a more globalized world, different challenges that they need to deal with, things like AI, machine learning, skills they need to build up and maintain if they're not assisted with learning to read for meaning? What are you setting them up for? What sort of life of dignity and agency? Never mind if they're maybe lucky enough to get the job as a cashier, if you even have that sort of employment created in your country in the first place.
It's just, this is just cynical twisting of the knife to degrade the social fabric and to turn South Africans against each other. And it quite frankly enrages me. But anyway, let us go on to our very last story. And this is about the increase that civil servants have gotten. The Public Service and Administration Minister announced that public servants will be receiving a 4.7% salary increase effective from the 1st of April 2024. And this will be applied across national and provincial governments. It affects people on the lower end of the civil servants' pay grade. I think they said levels 1 to 12 in the reporting. Now, this is a below inflation wage increase. However, when you consider the goals, the ambitious goals of Treasury in reining in the ridiculous costs, and Treasury's cheery, predictions that we're going to get some sort of major reduction in spending in the next couple of years, this is probably still a bit too high. Chris, what do you make of this?
You should also maybe measure it in the context of government efficiency or the lack thereof. And in a paper published by the Institute of Race Relations earlier this year on reforms and policy proposals around improving South Africa's growth trajectory, which, if we can call it that, we might reach 1.6% GDP growth over the medium term. That's not nearly enough at the levels you need to make a substantial dent in the unemployment figures, in poverty alleviation, in the general improving the dynamism of the South African economy and pushing us to a level equitable or near our emerging market peers. Lots of good detail in that particular paper, but one thing to highlight is as the amount of spending by the South African government has increased, the efficiency and efficacy of the government has decreased. So even for those who are proponents of a developmental state, a big government that needs to capacitate growth, provide social services through things like public works, but also through healthcare and other forms of social assistance, the South African government hasn't done that in a particularly good way. So it takes more of the sort of economic pie generated largely by the private sector, but it doesn't put out what it should be doing if it wants to play that developmental role. So even by those measures of those who advocate for that sort of system, the South African government doesn't fulfill that. A large part of that, the South African government, is the public sector. Wage bill, lots of employees across various departments, various government entities. But questions must be asked around efficacy, accountability, meritocracy. Are the right people in the right positions? We talked about education, the second story of today. Education is every year one of the biggest items in the budget. If you look at how many young South Africans drop out of school, who are not equipped to deal with the world,
able to read,
where is that money spent?
Exactly. So, you know, we really do have a very big problem with our money, not just us spending too much, but as you say, you know, just efficiency, that we are not getting value for money all across government, whether it be in the quality of work performed by civil servants, whether it be in the details of procurement, which tend to be given to politically connected parties due to preferential procurement. And that is fundamentally the problem with South Africa's governance. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. We hope you found this show interesting. We will be back tomorrow. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.